Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome, everybody, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. For Greg Corumbus, I am Brett Winterbull with Radio America. Thrilled to be joined by Jim Garrity from National Review. How you doing, Jim?
Brett, good to be here.
It's always exciting to talk to you. It's always exciting to share martinis with you. Certainly an amazing selection and array of martinis before us. Let's jump into the very first one. A very, very good martini as Verrilli from the Obama Justice Department or the Solicitor General's office had a very tough time of it just yesterday at the Supreme Court with the battle regarding SB 1070. Here's what Chris Kobach had to say about the battle.
Never before has that refusal to follow to enforce federal law resulted in preempting the states from enforcing their own laws that mirror federal law. And I think that is the fundamental problem of the Justice Department's case. The court recognized that problem, harped on that problem again and again, and the Justice Department had no answer.
All right, so getting your thoughts, Jim, how do you think this went down, and why do you think this is such a great martini?
For perspective, those angry shouts you hear in the background behind the Solicitor General are actually the Supreme Court justices mocking him. That's how bad it was. No, I exaggerate slightly. That's a crowd outside the Supreme Court. But no, this is a very familiar good martini because we all had this reaction after the oral arguments over Obamacare that Solicitor General Verrilli, before this, widely considered to be a perfectly fine legal mind and a perfectly good lawyer who the perspective was that before Obamacare, he just choked. Like Scott Norwood or Bill Buckner, take your sports metaphor of your choice, that he just froze up and just didn't have a good day. But now the argument is over. The Arizona law that would have local police checking the IDs to see if the people they were investigating or arresting were here in the country legally, and if they were not, to get in the process of get them deported. The Obama administration argued that this was an infringement of federal authorities and the state of Arizona's response basically being, you got to be kidding me. These are policemen. Their job is to enforce the laws. Don't tell us we can't do this. And it sounded like the justices were just very skeptical. Even the wise Latina Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who just was rather doubtful, just kind of said, I can't follow the logic on this. And so as we should all always say in these things, oral arguments do not necessarily guarantee how the justices are going to decide, but it's just kind of fascinating to see Verrilli have two consecutive very bad days of oral arguments. Chances are he's going to be the scapegoat for the administration on this, but I think there's a very strong argument. Look, the administration is just not operating in line with the Constitution, and when you do that, you find yourself before the Supreme Court having to make some very difficult arguments. So I will raise my glass to Solicitor General Verrilli. I hope he gets over this terrible gypsy curse that he has somehow run afoul of. And, but as a result of that, it'll be good news for conservatives to see the Obama administration perhaps having not just one, but perhaps two very high profile defeats before the Supreme Court.
My advice to Solicitor General Verrilli is to keep doing exactly what you're doing. Prepare in exactly the same way in all these cases. Drink the wine the night before or whatever it is that you're doing. Whatever your ritual is, keep it up. It's clear that it's the Supreme Court with the problem, not you. You keep doing exactly what you're doing in all of these cases, and we'll keep enjoying your very, very good martinis. I think it's extremely interesting, Jim. All right. Well, listen, here comes a martini that on its surface looks sort of entertaining and maybe interesting, but at its base is just very bad. Michelle Obama goes out into the heartland, goes out into Nebraska to give a speech about American values and holds up as the preeminent achievement, as the most important achievement of the Obama administration, the contraception mandate. Am I tasting this properly? The contraception mandate is the greatest achievement of all of the Obama achievements thus far, Jim?
Brett, we recall that in 2008, for the first time in her life, Michelle Obama was proud of her country, and now she really has something to be proud of, a contraception mandate. Not the man on the moon, our valiant soldiers. What's kind of fascinating is that people have been reading the campaign spot. No, I've been reading a biography of the Obamas in the White House by Jody Kantor, a New York Times correspondent. Plenty of ugly details that I've been writing about, but it's not by no means a slam book. It's a very, I think, nuanced portrait. And there are certain points where you come across very sympathetic to Michelle Obama. I think the Obamas have really done their best to keep their kids out of the spotlight, and they're, you know, there's not, they're not relentlessly bad. But when they go out and do this, when they go out and say that what we're proudest of or our biggest achievement is the contraception mandate, you just wonder if they're just from different planets or something. I mean, you know, sometimes we have these inverted situations in which what's bad for the country is good for conservative, you know, the sides we wish to win in these sorts of disputes. It's good for us if Michelle Obama is running around saying that the contraception mandate is the foremost achievement of the Obama administration. But having said that, it is kind of bizarre that we now have people in the administration who think this way, who think that this is one of their great achievements. So I'll be very happy to move on to the third and crazy martini, unless you have any further thoughts on Michelle Obama's criteria.
Again, my advice to the first lady, as similar with Virilli, you're doing a great job as a first. You keep saying those things, and we'll be happy to watch this conversation unfold. All right, well, here comes the very strange, odd, weird, bizarre martini, a lowly mid-level EPA bureaucrat giving a speech a couple of years ago. Did I hear correctly? Did he really say we need to crucify the oil companies to make an example of them? I mean, I've heard rumblings of him walking it back, but tell me about Mr. Armendariz here and his desire to crucify the oil companies to set an example, Jim.
Yeah, he was using this as a metaphor of their approach to the oil companies. He went back to not ancient history, but you know, several centuries of history, and he said that the way of empires to enforce law and to intimidate their opponents was just to take the first five people they saw and crucify them to make an example of them, so that everyone else would tremble and cower before their might. I believe it was Conan who said, the barbarian, who said that what is best in life is to see your enemies defeated before you and hear the lamentations of their women. Now, Brett, I don't know about you. I don't know if that's really the perspective I'd like to see in my mid-level Environmental Protection Agency administrators. I don't necessarily want it's kind of fascinating if they see themselves as the conquering army in this metaphor, that's what they see their natural role of this. I'm going to make just kind of a general guideline, a suggestion to people in politics. Avoid the verb crucify unless you're giving some sort of statement around Easter time or something. It seems fairly clear. This is, you know, probably, you know, PR 101. The only metaphor I can think of, or the only way to put a positive spin on this, is that you look at how shale is working out. You look at the fracking and all the things we've seen, and all the enormous energy potential we're seeing from oil companies and gas companies in this country in recent years, is that conceivably, because of this EPA overreach, it is possible that within 3 days the oil companies will come back even better than ever. If you want to extend that metaphor further.
Happy Easter to everybody.
Yeah, probably not the thinking he was applying. And again, chances are, let's try to avoid crucifixion metaphors in our discussion of public policy. That's my little pro tip for the day, Brett.
My advice to Antonio Villaraigosa, the chairman of the Democratic convention this summer, my advice to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, put him on in primetime. We want him maybe to do the nominating speech for Obama, the renomination speech. We want him on primetime. You know what? It may sound predictable. My advice to Al Armendariz, you keep doing exactly what you're doing.
I believe the coming theme, cower before our might, puny Americans. You know, that's the message I want to see from the, you know, we will make you bleed. Yes, that's the bleed, oil companies, bleed. That'll be the rallying cry at the Democratic convention in Charlotte, North Carolina this year.
That's right. Forget Barabbas. They're going to call for Solyndra. I don't know. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm feeling a little tipsy. I'm feeling a little happy. I'm feeling a little odd, but certainly always fun to enjoy the three martini lunch with you, Jim Garrity. Thanks so much for having me sit in today for Greg Corombos.
Brett, always enjoy it.
I am Brett Winterbull for Radio America and for Greg Corombos. That is Jim Garrity from National Review. This is the three martini lunch. We'll talk to you next time.